of property damage. But that's the way most Americans are willing to take it, and they're terrified of it. So what are we going to do? There's a couple of things to do. One is to make those videos, put them on Twitter, put them on Facebook, put them on Instagram, and show this city is okay. It is okay. I'm fine. You're fine. And the other thing is to band together, and that means supporting KBOO Portland. I can't believe it's the bottom of the hour already. I didn't let one person call in. My pets are over here because I'm yelling so loud. They want to make sure I'm okay. I want to make sure you're okay. I want to make sure the station is okay. And this means that you need to support us. You need to pull up KBOO.fm. That's how we're doing it right now because it's a pandemic. And, you know, I could call this broadcast Demonocracy Now because things have gotten so bad. But we have to face it. And we have to have our ducks in a row and understand what we are going to do about it. Where were you when you heard of the criminal U.S. bombing of the masses in the Al Maryah shelter in Baghdad? Did you listen to KBOO as I described how a series of different bombs was used to rip off the top, penetrate the massive concrete shielding, and literally roast the hundreds of women and children below into a massive flaming soup? KBOO reported it that way. We're different. It's the news you're not supposed to know, and I'm out of time. And thanks to the engineer, and I hope that you will stay tuned for Per Fodring coming up next, going out to you via KBOO 90.7 FM through the transmitter on the hill, and KBOO.fm to all the ships at sea.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Coming up, Fight the Empire.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fodring. The show is Fight the Empire, coming to you on KBOO and only on KBOO. We are KBOO is here for you with news you won't get anywhere else, and we hope that you will reciprocate. We hope that you will support KBOO because we are supporting you. So we are we're here for you. So let's, with that having said, let's get on with the show. Big news. These days is the poisoning of a Russian blogger or dissident Alexei Navalny. And it just looks to me like if Russian agents, government agents, did indeed poison Navalny, they really botched the job. There are so many ways to poison somebody quickly and undetected. And whoever poisoned Navalny managed to do in such a way that he looks like he will survive, and that it's the poisoning is kind of known all over the world. It was like the poisoning of Navalny was almost guaranteed to go public the way it was done. The poison that injured Navalny, called Well, Novichok means Russian for newcomer, and it described a whole class of nerve agents that were developed in the Soviet Union some time ago. And it was developed in the Soviet Union, but others have the formula and the poison itself. It's not a huge secret anymore. I believe the formula was published on social media one time, and the ingredients are kind of available anywhere. So it's not true that use of Novichok could only have been done by Russians. Russian scientists say that that Novichok, as a nerve agent, it would have quickly killed anyone who came in contact with it. The thing about a nerve agent is that a very small amount can kill somebody very, very quickly. And as we see with Navalny, it did not kill him. He survived. He was in a Russian hospital for some time. Doctors were attempting to keep him alive, and then they were kind of persuaded to allow him to be sent to Germany, where his family wanted him to be. So since this there are a lot of people who think that that somehow the very public nature of this poisoning makes people think that maybe that's the way that Vladimir Putin wanted it to be, that he didn't want to keep a secret, that that he's sort of flaunting his power to poison anybody he wants. And in other words, they're portraying Putin as some kind of a mad emperor trying to terrify his opponents. Well, my opinion is that whatever you may think of Putin, he's not that stupid. I mean, Putin, I don't believe that Putin is something of an autocrat and rather conservative in many ways, but I don't think he's crazy. I don't think he's a mad emperor trying to terrify his opponents. And there are other suspects too in this case of Alexei Navalny. There are other suspects as to who might have slipped him that poison. As far as I know, and if people want to look it up, correct me on this, he was on a flight from I believe Siberia somewhere, and he was he had tea in a airport cafe, and then he boarded his plane, and he headed for the bathroom, and he had some kind of seizure. So that some time had elapsed between, presumably, if he was poisoned in the cafe, there was some time had elapsed since he ingested the poison and when it actually took effect. So that makes one think that there was not really a nerve agent, because that would have killed him right on the spot. But whatever the poison, there are other suspects in this case. One would be corrupt oligarchs or corrupt enemies of Navalny. Navalny's his crusade against corrupt business people in Russia, many of whom he claimed were connected with Putin. But there are lots of corrupt people in Russia. I don't think that all of them are connected to Putin. A lot of them are independent operators. They may be, who knows who they're connected with. So any one of them would have probably wanted to get rid of Navalny, and if they had enough money to get hold of the poison and find somebody to slip it to him, they could have done the job. Also, you can't rule out some kind of Western intelligence operatives. They would have, they have their networks within Russia, and they have the means to deliver this poison. And in some ways, they might have more to gain from the poisoning of Navalny. So that's something that I would keep in mind. I'm still waiting to hear more on this case. Right now, Navalny is being kept in a medically induced coma, and he's slowly recovering. And maybe when he recovers and is able to communicate, we will find out more about exactly what happened. The poisoning of Navalny has been compared to a case a couple years ago in England, Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia in Salisbury, England. And this is a they call a previous case of over Novichok poisoning. To kind of set the scene, Sergei Skripal was a Russian, I think he worked for the Russian intelligence, GRU, but he was a, for many years, he was a spy for the West. And he was finally caught by the Russians and put on trial. And he's, I believe, was sentenced to 13 years in prison, which if he was indeed a traitor, you'd think he'd get a harsher punishment than 13 years in prison. But anyway, while he was in prison, he was exchanged for Russian agents who were detained, who were arrested in the West. There was a big prisoner swap, and Skripal was released, and he went to England, and he moved to Salisbury. Very interesting that when he was operating for the West within Russia, his handler was a fellow named Pablo Miller. And when Skripal got out, or when he was exchanged and moved to England, he moved to Salisbury, and that is where Pablo Miller was living. So kind of a reunion, I suppose. But the Skripal case has been presented as a previous case of Novichok poisoning done by Russian agents. And if you check out the case, and I've done quite a bit of research on it, the story really kind of, the official story leaves open a lot of questions that really demand answers. The official story goes that the two Russian agents sprayed nerve agent on the door handle of Skripal's house, on the handle of the front door, and that when Skripal and his daughter left the house, presumably both of them handled the door handle and got the poison on them, and then they went about their business. They went from their house into town. They, at one point, they were in a park, and I think Skripal was feeding bread to some ducks in a pond. They had a drink someplace. They had lunch, and then it was only later, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that the two of them had these seizures at on a park bench in town. Well, if this is a nerve agent that could kill so quickly, that doesn't fit in with that explanation. In other words, how were Skripal and his daughter both able to ingest this poison from the door handle, go about their business, and only hours later have seizures? And at the same time, they didn't. When you figure that Skripal is larger than his daughter, you know that seemed kind of odd that they would both have this seizure at the same time from presumably the same amount of poison. So that is a question that has not been answered in the Skripal case. It's a very poor comparison with the Navalny case. These two Russian agents, or the people, the two guys who are claimed to be Russian agents, after they presumably sprayed this nerve agent on the door handle, they went into town. They could have taken the next train back to London, but for some reason they didn't. They kind of roamed around town visiting shops and whatever, and it was only later in the day that they took the train back to London, which seems kind of odd. One would think that if they'd sprayed poison on the door handle, they would have gotten out of town at their very next opportunity, but for some reason they didn't. They also, the night before, they'd been in a hotel in London having a little party with drugs and booze and a lady, and supposedly they had this deadly poison in their room and having a little party, which doesn't seem like the thing that trained intelligence operatives would do. Another question with the Skripal case is the poison was presumably sprayed on the door handle, but somehow the roof of the house got contaminated. I believe they had to dismantle the roof or something and to clean it up or whatever. And finally, another question is, why kill a prisoner who had been exchanged for other prisoners? This is sort of a thing that is not usually done in between nations, you know, intelligence operatives. One time on my show, I interviewed a former British intelligence agent named Annie Michon, and she said that this is not done. Once you have a prisoner swap, you don't go killing the prisoners who have been swapped. You would kind of mess up swapping prisoners is sort of it's kind of a delicate operation between nations, and killing them after they've been swapped would kind of mess everything up. So those are some of the questions in this whole Skripal case. It's not that when you compare it to the case of Alexei Navalny, well, maybe it should be compared, because the Navalny case kind of leaves a lot of questions, too. So if you want to find out more about this, there are a couple places to go online. One is Craig Murray is the man's name. He is a former diplomat. I think he's a former British ambassador in one of the Russian Central Asian republics. And he has written extensively on this case, so he's online. He has a blog. And then there is another blog called Blogmire, Blogmire, and it's operated by a British person. I believe he's a minister. His name is Rob Slane, S-L-A-N-E, and he has investigated this case, and he's written quite a bit about it. So those are a couple sources of if you want to find out more about the Skripal case, those would be a couple places to go. This is KBOO, Fight the Empire. This is a sort of a program that you can only hear on KBOO. It's a station that exists to inform you and keep you attuned to what is going on, as Teresa says, the news you're not supposed to know, and we try to make all that news public. So we are hoping that you will return the favor, that you will sell all more things. We always welcome you to send us tips, things we should be investigating, but we also need your support to stay on the air. And one way to do that is to go online to kboo.fm. And up in the upper right-hand corner, there's a box that says Donate. So click on Donate and go on from there. And it's very easy. There are ways to send your hard-earned money to KBOO, which is working very hard to earn it in your behalf. So if anybody has any remarks or any questions about the Navalny and the Skripal case, give us a call, 231-8187.
Perry, you actually do have a caller online, too, who would like to make some comments for you.
Okay, let's do that. We got a caller. Hello there.
Hi, Per. This is John. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
You hear me good?
I do, yes.
Awesome. Okay, I Googled just now what was the date of the Moscow apartment bombings, and there was a series of bombings that allowed Russia the freedom to, well, this is kind of the gist of it in my recollection. I haven't even read the articles. Several articles came up with troubling questions about the bombings. So you say Putin isn't so flagrant. Well, I always believed at the time that Putin was behind those bombings that led to the, you know, war on Chechnya and the blaming of Chechnya for it. So I think Putin is very flagrant. So that, mm-hmm. that, like I said, I don't know anything about the poisonings, but they all look pretty flagrant displays of Putin's murderous tactics. All right, see you later.
Well, I'd like to. Okay, are you there, Stefan? Well, because he hung up. Still there? I guess he hung up. I would just say that you know, there's lots of reasons to criticize Putin, but he seems to be a pretty I don't know how you describe it. It's sort of a controlled kind of person. He's not bombastic the way some of our leaders are. You know, he speaks very quietly. Maybe he does some pretty deadly things, but he doesn't really advertise it. That's the impression I get. And that whatever you want to say about him, he's not crazy. I think he's very controlled. And he has his agenda, and so. But that's just my opinion. Maybe he's got this kind of a crazy streak in him that he wants people to know that he can poison them at will, no matter where they are in the world. Although even there, it's interesting that if he really did set up the poisoning of Sergei Skripal, that failed. Because Skripal apparently, while he survived, apparently Skripal and his daughter have been sort of given new lives. Some say they're living in New Zealand, you know, kind of like the Witness Protection Program. You'd think that they'd be well enough known that they would be kind of outed wherever they go, but apparently that's not the case. If indeed they are still alive, nobody knows where they are. They were sort of in the hands of British authorities. Yulia gave a she was videotaped giving sort of saying. Well, making a statement, she was videotaped in a garden in England, and she was, you know, kind of assuring her friends that she was well, and don't know exactly other things she said. That she said she hoped to return to Russia. She does have family in Russia. She had a fiance in Russia, and I believe an aged mother, and you know, they would be wondering, you know, about her fate, unless they've been secretly tipped off, who knows. But presumably the Skripals are well, nobody really knows if they are living or dead or where they are. If anybody else wants to call in, the number is 503-231-8187. To me, the case is still open. As far as Navalny goes, like I said, you know, Putin would obviously be a suspect, or it could be that there are people in the Russian intelligence establishment that they may be out to get people they regard as enemies, of whom Navalny would be one, with or without the knowledge of President Putin. They may be acting on their own. They may think they're acting on his behalf, but they would certainly be a suspect. So, and like I said, there are a lot of corrupt oligarchs in Russia, and many of them are independent operators. They are not connected to Putin. They would certainly have reason to get rid of Alexei Navalny, since his crusade is going around exposing these people. And like I said, it could even be U.S. intelligence operators. They would have a lot to gain. Of course, they'd have to sacrifice one of their own allies or people to do this, but spies and agents have been known to do this in the past. So there we go.
Hey, Pierre, I just want to let you know, while we have a little bit more time left, you had a few more callers. First, you had another Harry who wanted to make some comments for you.
Sure, okay. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Harry, you're on.
I'm on.
My call.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yes, thank you for taking my call. When I first heard of the poisonings, the first thing I thought, because remember, he was poisoned in Russia. The Russians looked at it and they did tests and said they didn't know what it was, and they actually sent him back to Germany because they thought maybe they would help. And then the German says, "Oh, it's a nerve agent." But you also have to remember the first thing that came to mind: who would do this? Who would benefit from this? Did anyone think about the CIA? I mean, he's a Russian. He's a Russian person, which means, hey, in the CIA book, we can kill him. You know, and the reason why would they poison them? Well, everyone forgets they're having elections right now, and so that's us, our CIA being involved in their elections. That's why the Russians are messing with our elections, because we mess with theirs. Maybe we could come up with a treaty saying, hey, you don't mess with our election, we won't mess with yours.
Mm-hmm.
But, and the last caller mentioned about the those apartment bombings and the starting of the Chechnya War. Well, what happened was they killed quite a few people, and the Russians went in the Chechnyas, and they defeated the rebels. The rebels fled to Europe. And according to BBC, one by one, they're being assassinated. Not by poison, they're being shot, and there was a couple of them shot who were murdered in Berlin. There was one murdered in Paris. So they'll still hunt them down. And when they talk to, according to the BBC, when they talk to President Putin, and he says, "I'm going to hunt them down," because of what they did to the apartment mm-hmm. buildings and the stuff like that, I'm going to hunt them down no matter where they go.
Well, those are points to keep in mind. I think we might have another caller on waiting to get on the air, too.
Okay,
so,
thank you for listening to my opinion.
Sure. Well, it's worth considering. There's a lot to find out still about this case. Do we still have another caller waiting?
Yes, we do. Caller, you're on the... Hold on just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Pear.
Hi.
Again, I want to bring up the book Solving 9/11 by Christopher Boland. There are so many things in here that point to...
Well, okay, if people want to read that book, I encourage them, read it. Read it with an open mind, but that's really not... doesn't have much to do with what we're talking about here. So I'm going to have to let you go, but I encourage people to find out as much as they can about all these cases. So we're getting near the end of our time, sort of trying to wrap this show up. I would just say that a lot of these cases are not as open and shut as our media makes them appear to be. You know, we've been hearing a lot about the poisoning of Alexei Navalny and what you get on the mainstream news, even the more elevated mainstream news on the NPR, is that to them it seems to be an open and shut case. It was done by, on behalf of, maybe even ordered by Vladimir Putin. Well, that's a possibility, but I wouldn't rule out other possibilities, which we have outlined, some of our callers outlined them. And so that is something I would just say, keep an open mind, keep investigating. You can go online and check out some of these people. Also look into the case of Sergei Skripal. It's a very interesting case, and a lot has been said about it, and there are people who have been who continue to investigate the Skripal case. Craig Murray is one, and Rob Slane with his Blogmire blog is another. And so if you're interested, you can go online and look these people up and satisfy your curiosity.